Money is just the most liquid good by definition. And so, you know, it's what has the superior properties that lead it to be a liquid good. And, you know, Bitcoin has superior properties and we're all adopting it. Now, if we weren't all adopting Bitcoin, I mean, money is a shared illusion.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone agrees that a dollar is money because everyone knows you can go into a store and pay for shit with it and the government prints it fine. Everyone agrees that gold is money. It's been around 5,000 years. It's hard to get it out of the ground. They know what it is. It's shiny. You can see it, et cetera. You know, and what's happening is everybody's going to one day agree that Bitcoin is money. And, you know, I mean, a lot of us already know that, but some people don't. Some people don't believe that it's money, but the number of those people are shrinking and the number of people who believe are growing. As long as that trend continues, Bitcoin's going to be money. And, I mean, it already is, but it's going to be, you know, and if you look at its properties, if you look at its characteristics, I mean, that's what led Saylor to go, this is a better weapon. I mean, it's or safe to say, you know, we just invented gunpowder and you know, gold guys have got spears and you know, and axes. I mean, and, you know, I mean, fuck, gunpowder's going to win.
Yeah. Larry Lepard with us here in El Salvador. I was hoping you were going to bring Peter Schiff along with you so he could see how Bitcoin actually can be used in daily transactions.
Cage fight, huh?
Yes. We got to get Schiff down here at some point.
Yeah.
Get him off his island.
Yeah. So, nice to be here. Thanks for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
It's the first time in El Salvador, right?
First time in El Salvador, yeah. Okay. Love it so far. It's great.
It's... I think it's one of those things that all Bitcoiners need to come and experience firsthand.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So obviously the halving party was a great excuse for a lot of people.
Exactly. It worked well to
come down. So I've actually followed your stuff and I know that you come from the metal side of things, but
yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard your Bitcoin story.
How I transitioned.
So, yeah.
Yeah, sure. I'll take you through that. So, you know, first of all, the first part of my career, I wasn't involved in any sound money stuff. I was a technology investor, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I did
tech
not
stocks
know that.
From the
okay.
early 80s all the way to 2003 or 4. I mean, you know, just really
like
technology.
Professionally? That's
yeah,
what
professionally,
you were...
yeah, managing okay. funds, you know, venture capital funds mostly, you know, and got involved in the internet. We did PCs and graphic cards and disk drive and all that stuff. But that was the first chapter of my career, and it lasted until about 2004.
Okay.
And when the bubble burst, the internet bubble burst, I kind of said, I made enough money. I said, okay, this is good. I'm going to kind of retire or manage my own money and pivot into a, you know, just investing in a different way. And so I started spending a lot of time with my kids and their sports teams and stuff because they were young and growing up. And it was fun. And then 2008 happened, and I was a gold guy then too. I mean, I was a Ron Paul supporter. I believed in, you know, libertarianism and Austrian economics and, you know, sound money and all that. I mean, I got all of that at the time, but I wasn't radicalized for it. It was like, okay, it was just a part of my investing strategy. And then 2008 happened. I got radicalized, right? I mean, they bailed out those banks and I was pissed off. I mean, I was like, okay, this is a whole another, you know, animal we're dealing with here. They're going to debase this money. And I mean, little did I know, right? Because Q1, yeah, I mean, they started off just with, you know, TARP and, you know, and then they just went to QE1 and QE2 and QE, I mean, you know, and 0% interest. I mean, we all know what happened.
Well, in
right?
retrospect, based on what they did during COVID, it seems like nothing.
Oh, it's
what
trivial.
They did
yeah, right.
Yeah.
I mean,
but at the time, it was yeah, like,
oh, it's
my
huge.
Gosh.
I mean, the Fed balance sheet was $800 billion. It went to like $1.5 trillion. I freaked out. I was like, oh my God, you know, these savings I've got, they're going to get debased. You know, I'm young enough. I'm not going to have a good retirement if they get debased. So, excuse me. So I started getting radicalized for sound money. So actually, what drove Satoshi to write the white paper was also what drove me to pivot my business. And I said, okay, inflation's coming. Let's study inflation. Well, the last period of inflation we had was the 70s, right? Very highly inflationary period. What did well in the 70s? Top performing asset in the 70s, gold. Okay, and gold stocks. Gold stocks were up 35% compound for 10 years. Gold went from $35 in 71 to $800 at the end of the decade. So I thought, all right, if we're going to have inflation, I need to know about gold. So I went and educated myself in the gold business and started putting my money into gold mining stocks and pivoted and was a gold stock investor, really. I was taught by a really good guy in Boston.
Were you running any funds at that time?
Yeah,
or was it
I did. I did a little family and friends fund, you know, mostly my money, but some family and friends. And then started taking outside investors, and it grew as people heard about it. And I had a partner or a friend who was also in the same area, a guy named Walter Cabot, who's very famous, well-known gold stock investor. He kind of taught me the business. This is back in, you know, 08. And for a couple of years, it worked really well. You know, we had a couple of 40% annualized returns. And then, of course, gold hit a buzzsaw in 2011, 2012, and we had a really rough time for a bunch of years, which led me to getting very fit so that I can live to make sure we beat the central bankers.
Yeah, I was impressed you were out there yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I was fat and overweight before this whole thing happened.
So I have hope still.
You don't. You'll be fine. sound money saved me in the sense that it got me to get physically active. But anyway, so where did my Bitcoin story begin? So I'm managing this gold and silver fund, hoping they're going to protect us against sound money, or against debasement. And of course, we had a bear market, and that made it kind of rough. But and all along the way, I'd been aware of Bitcoin because I was Ron Paul and all those guys, New Hampshire Free State Project and all. I mean, I know people who up there, you know, there was a woman who did some work with me. I did some advertisements for Ron Paul when he ran for president, and graphic designer up there, and she bought a bunch of Bitcoin at, you know, $100 a coin. I mean, it's, you know, good going, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't do it. I'll tell you why. At the time, and I don't know if you recall, but there had been a lot of attempts to do internet-based money. You know, there was eCash and eGold and, you know, several Hashcash.
And coming from the tech side of things, you were probably aware of all those.
I was totally aware of them. And I thought to myself, this is kind of cool. You know, yeah, I'd love to have, you know, digital money outside of the state like gold. But, you know, as you recall, they didn't work. I mean, they all failed. They all had a fatal flaw. They had a double spend problem. They were centralized. I mean, you name it. There was something wrong with them. You know, Adam Back was involved with one of them that he contributed a piece to what ultimately became the white paper. But so my initial reaction, I was talking with Max about this yesterday. My initial reaction to Bitcoin was, oh, this is fucked. It'll never work. Technically, it'll never work. Not that I don't believe in it, just it won't work. But, you know, and so that's 08, 9, 10, 11. I thought, well, how do I get some of these? Well, you got to go to a cafe. You got to give some guy some cash. You know, he's going to give you a paper wallet. You know, I mean, I'm like, what? You know, that just seems kind of weird. You know, and so, you know, or you can run a computer and you can mine them yourself. And, you know, actually my daughter, who was in high school at the time, her boyfriend was mining them. But I think he got a lot of them. But I also think when they hit $1 or $2 a share, he sold them to buy a car.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like, didn't really understand what he had. But anyway, so I kind of just, you know, didn't pay attention. But it kept bouncing along. And, when it broke out from I remember it was in the 10s and 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s. And then it broke out. It was a couple hundred. I was like, okay, well, it's still working, right? It's now we're four or five years in. And then it went over 100. And then it went to 1,000. I was like, holy shit. This is, you know, maybe there's something here. I got to pay attention to this. So I went and I started filling out the forms for Mt. Gox. And, you know, I just, sheer grace of God, right? I was about to send the money to Mt. Gox and they failed. So I would have lost all that money, but very soon thereafter, Coinbase came public, as you recall, and Coinbase was in San Francisco, venture backed, real American. Okay, this is
you don't have to send some money order to Japan.
Exactly, this is totally legit. Yeah. Okay, fine. So I went and I bought a handful of coins at Coinbase, not a ton, but you know, like $300-$400 a coin, something like that, and I started studying it, right? And my concern as a tech guy, tech investor background, was always, is this shit going to work? You know, is it going to blow up? I mean, that was my, because I, having had a lot of tech experience and being around from the IBM PC days when it was, you know, launched in 1980, you know, probably before most people's listening's time, but there's something called the blue screen of death. You know, you'd be running your IBM PC, and something would go wrong and the screen would just go blue. And you know, guess what? Whatever file you were working on, you lost that work.
Yeah.
And, I mean, so back then they had autosave functions and you had to remember to save your files because...
I remember doing homework in that era and like you're just about finished and then it's...
Yeah, right. It crashes and you reboot it, you know, just turn on, off, and it comes back up, but, you know, whatever you were doing, right. So that kind of thought pattern led me to just be suspicious of the technology. So then what I did was I started going to meetups I was in Boston, so I went to an MIT meetup. And there were a couple.
What year was that?
We're probably talking 2014, okay. 2013, 14, 15, after I bought some, but not a lot. And I sat next to a core developer. I started talking to the guy. He says, yeah, I'm one of the core developers that work on Dwell. I knew a core developer. I knew that was big. And I said to him, I said, what's the story on this thing? You know, I mean, are you worried about it? Is it going to work? I mean, is the technology sound? I mean, And I didn't remember at this time, I didn't understand the hashing. I didn't understand blockchain. I didn't understand SHA-256. Yeah. Difficult. I mean, none of that. I didn't get any of that. I just knew it was magic internet money. Right? And he said to me, he said, well, you know, to be honest with you, it's an experiment and we don't know and I can't guarantee anything. And I said, well, what worries you? He said, well, sometimes we'll make some changes to the code. And I go home that night and put my head on the pillow. And I think to myself, fuck, I might have just blown the whole thing up. And so, you know, to a professional investor who's looking at putting big money in this thing, I was kind of like, eh, you know, I don't know, right? I mean, if it's a guy who's running it, he's thinking it could blow up, you know, so I was cautious, right? But then the phone.
Well, and at that point, it could blow up.
Yeah, it could. Well, we had and we had
screwed it up.
Yeah, I mean, if you actually check the history, there were a few back doors that were closed. You know, we had the hard forks. You know, we had the block war. I mean, there were things that were risky that, you know, everyone who was involved with it says, yeah, at any point in time, you know, I mean, Vera tried to take it in the wrong direction and the nodes outvoted him. I mean, there was shit that, you know, could have gone bad, right? Yeah. And we all know that. But I kept buying it slowly, just kind of accumulating it as it went higher. And then I really got FOMO'd into in Thanksgiving of 2017, I remember I took that big ramp up to 17. Uh-huh. I was like, holy shit, this is a totally different beast. Man, I mean, and that was when I kind of got it, and of course I bought a bunch at 17, which right.
Everybody has to buy at the top.
You got to, you absolutely got to. You got to FOMO in. And then I went down to 10. I doubled down. Then I went down to 4.5. I doubled down again, and then I just kind of got into kind of a DCA rhythm where as I'd make more money, I'd buy more coins, you know. And I mean, it's obviously it's been up and down, and 2020 happened, went way down. I mean, we all know it's a rocky ride, right? But I, you know, and of course, Safe's book came out. I read that. We had Safe to Boston. I, you know, hosted a luncheon for him with institutional investors. None of them got it. You know, but the guy,
really?
Yeah, none of them. But the guy, I mean, the Fidelity guys got it. But that was it.
I feel like after reading that book, it's hard for me.
How can you not get
it?
I know that book is such a fabulous book. It's going to be historical. Yeah. I give it out when I try an orange pill. Anybody who's smart, I give them that book.
Yeah.
Because it's obvious, right? I mean,
and I love how it doesn't even talk about Bitcoin until
the first half is Austrian economics, which you know nobody knows. And I love the fact that, you know, I run around. I mean, and I knew all that shit. I read Von Mises, I read Rothbard, I read all those guys in the 80s.
But it was nice the way he synthesized it all together.
Absolutely.
Because you knew all those things, but it was hard to even, like, explain it to
it
somebody
was.
Else. But
it
the
was.
Way he, like, put it together.
And
what's
so cool to me is, you know, and I got 30-year-olds and 20-year-olds coming up to me quoting these guys. I'm like, holy shit, how did this happen? You know what I mean? I mean, I was always the old, you know, gold guy crank, you know what I mean? Austrian crank that nobody paid attention to. And everyone thought I was nuts, including my wife. And seriously. So I got more and more conviction as I learned more and more about it, like we all do. And I just kept getting heavier and heavier into it. But I was still managing this gold stock fund, and I still am today. And I have a lot of clients there. I feel very responsible for them. And we're going to do fine. I mean, gold's going to go up with Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Bitcoin's going to go up more. But, you know, my responsibility to the gold fund is to get them all out at a very nice profit, which I think on this next run we will do. And then we'll see. I mean, I haven't decided the answer.
So you guys don't hold any Bitcoin in that fund?
Yes, we do.
You do?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Well, and that's an interesting story, right? So somewhere along the line, I thought to myself, you know, this is a sound money fund. And I've told them gold, and I've told them gold mining stocks, and we've done all that. But this Bitcoin thing is a real, you know, there's enormous. And so I thought, I got to tell everybody, right? So I took, you know, a 1-2% Bitcoin position, you know, 98%. Well, you know, and some people left. Some people got pissed and they left. And, you know, and I think the cost was, I mean, it was like 4,000 a coin or something, right? And, you know, and they're glad we did it now.
Yeah.
And now we've got about a 10 to 12% Bitcoin, actually Bitcoin waiting. And then we've done some private deals too.
Is that with, have you done any rebalancing during that time? Or is that just from the initial?
That's just from the initial. Well, we've added.
Okay.
We've actually added. I mean, but some of it's from the initial.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a time we needed some liquidity. We might have sold some and bought some back. But long story short, yeah, we're up to about, you know, 12% now, I think, 10, 12% at today's prices in Bitcoin. And we did some Bitcoin venture-related things. We were in a miner. We were early-stage mining, Bitcoin mining operation. We've done Ego Death, and we've done 1031. We're in Custodia Bank, which just got a very unfavorable judgment, Caitlin. We really believe in what she's trying to do, but sadly, and I think she'll recover, and there are other ways for that business to go, but that was kind of a kick in the teeth. But the point is, you know, we have serious some Bitcoin exposure to the gold fund, but most of the people who invest with me,
it balances out the miner performance
a little bit. Yeah, it helps. It definitely helps.
And, so why do you think the gold miners have been?
Oh, the miners have been horrible. Well, that's an entirely different story. I mean, look, when they work, they really work.
Yeah.
I mean, keep in mind, You know, in 2019, my fund went up 97%.
Okay. Wow.
2020, my fund went up 122%. Okay, so that's basically 400% in 2 years.
Yeah.
So that's what happens when the miners are working. Okay, that was COVID, we're going to print money. They're explosive to the upside, okay? To be totally fair, they're down 40 to 50% from there now. We gave half of that back as they corrected, okay? And sadly, as it always works within these businesses, you know, in 2020, after I'd been up 400%, everyone and the brother wanted to invest,
yeah.
Right? Give me some of that. And of course, now they're bitching. You know, what the hell happened? How am I down 40%? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but to answer your question, why the miners have been such poor performers, the miners are a leveraged bet on gold. I mean, if you actually look at gold, it's up quite a bit, you know, since 2016.
Yeah.
In 2016, it was
that's what it seemed. I mean, I don't follow that with, you know, that closely, but I mean, you see gold going up and the miners kind of like stagnating.
Well, we'll get to that in a second. But yeah, just to reprise the history, in 2016, I mean, so in 2011, after I'd had a couple of really good years, gold was $1,900. Big bear market, a lot of, you know, ways I can explain that, but it's not worth going into. At 2016, gold bottomed end of 2015, gold bottomed at $1,050. Today, gold is at $2,300. Okay, so gold has been in a bull market since 2016, with ups and downs, you know, zigzag along that way. And if you held gold in that time frame, you made money. Gold miners are leveraged bets on gold, very leveraged bets on gold, which is why you can have a couple 100% up years and then a 30% down or 40% down, right? And the reason the miners, and they're starting to take off again now, and I think we're about to have some more of those up years, but the reason the miners are so leveraged is that they have a big operating cost. It costs money to take gold out of the ground. Typically, back in 2016, it probably cost $800 on average to mine gold, and gold was $1,000. It's a pretty skinny margin. It went up to $1,300 or $1,400, and that $800 cost of taking it out didn't go up that much. And so the margin started to grow, and the stock started to go up. Today, the average cost to take an ounce out of the ground is $1,300, and the price is $2,300. But that's only very recently.
Yeah.
As recently as a couple months ago, the price was $2,000 or $1,900, something like that. So, and that $1,300, that is affected by inflation in a big way. Okay, in other words, you know, you've got explosives, you've got oil, you've got, you know, truck tires, you've got
wages,
all of that. So every year, you know, the cost of mining an ounce goes up, you know, inflation adjusted, you know, 8 to 12%. Well, okay, so if the price of the metal doesn't go up that much, guess what? Your margin just disappeared. And so what was going on since 2020, we had big burst of inflation, stocks went way up, price of gold went way up, but then the price of gold leveled off at, you know, 1900, 1800, 2000. But, you know, what used to be 1100 to mine it is now 13,
yeah.
Going to 14, going to 15. So everyone who's a gold stock investor is saying, holy shit, with gold at 19 and 13 in cost, going to 16, going to, you know, pretty soon these guys aren't going to make any money. These stocks are no good. So that's why the gold stocks have performed so poorly. Now, and I can say with certainty that, you know, the consensus estimates on Wall Street and in Toronto, where most gold stocks are priced, was that the price of gold was going to stay in the $1,800 to $1,900 area. And if it did, they would be shitty businesses because the cost would keep going up.
Yeah.
But what's happened is gold has just broken out. There's a 2,100 ceiling. It's now at 23. You know, I believe it'll go to 25 or 3,000. And, of course, at that level.
I know it is because Schiff, you know, finally has something to tweet about.
Right, so. Exactly. Yeah, and he's happy with it. And, yeah, poor Peter. Yeah, poor Peter. He's missing it all. He's got so much of it right, and he just can't get this piece right. I tried to educate him. I debated him. I tried to help him out. But anyway, I think we're in one of those periods. We're about to have another run. But I would say to everybody who's involved in gold mining stocks, I mean, remember, these are stocks to rent, not own. I mean, it's a very difficult business. And you know, yes, they work really well when you have a tailwind at your back, but they also don't work so well when the metal price is flat or going down. In that respect, they have a similar characteristic to Bitcoin miners, right? I mean, Bitcoin miners are...
Yeah, I was wondering what
A real parallel, right? I mean, there's a real parallel. Yeah. You know, you got to keep your energy costs low. And you're fighting that halving. I mean, every 4 years, your reward's getting chopped. And so, you know.
And I guess in gold mining, it gets more and more difficult, the percentage
it does.
Content you're bringing
it
up.
It does. I mean, we've been mining gold for hundreds of years, and I can assure you the easy deposits have all been found.
Yeah.
I mean, I always laugh. There was something on the web or on Twitter or something, you know, Ghana, somebody in Ghana said, oh, we found 30 billion ounces of gold. You know, I mean, No, you didn't. It's actually physically impossible. I mean, the whole world has been so scoured for gold. And there used to be that we would find 5 and 10 million deposits, 5 million, 10 million ounce deposits, you know, one every few years. And now we're not finding any of those. I mean, we're finding like one and two. I mean, so it does get harder. There's a slight difficulty adjustment in gold too, right? It gets harder to find good deposits. So, but, you know, it's a tough business. It's a really tough business. And I would say, you know, throughout this whole process, you know, I have become more and more and more orange-pilled. You know, it's very, very clear to me that, you know, Bitcoin is digital gold. It's a superior form of gold in all respects except the volatility. And if you can handle the volatility, which I propose you handle it by sizing your position correctly, then it's just a much better alpha choice. I mean, it's crushing gold.
Yeah.
So
it seems like in the metals camp, there's like this divide between, you know, the people that are metals but get Bitcoin and now are kind of like you moving in that direction.
Yeah.
And then the ones that absolutely hate it, I think partially because they feel like it's stealing some of gold's momentum.
There's no doubt that it is. And it's sad. And I, you know, everyone has their own reasons. I mean, what is it, Sinclair? It's hard to get a man to understand something that affects his pocketbook. You know what I mean? And so, you know, yeah, that's correct. I mean, you've seen a lot of the people pivot and understand it.
You see, like Kitco, like seems like they
pivoted,
and now,
or take a guy like Ronnie Stoferle, who's a good guy and a brilliant guy and a friend, and does, you know, a definitive gold report, but has a partner who's doing, you know, Bitcoin, and totally understands Bitcoin, and they support Bitcoin. You know, I mean, there's a role for both of them. There really is. I mean, it's not, you know, I mean, the one thing I would say, some Bitcoiners say, well, gold's going to zero tomorrow. No, that's not going to happen. Yeah, gold is going to work. Bitcoin's going to work a lot better, and that's really my way of viewing it. And so I actually think
I think there's a lot of Bitcoiners who have actually bought some gold since they got into Bitcoin.
Maybe a little. I mean, I like to say it's really good for bribing the border guards, right?
I mean, I think it's just to, you know, just to hedge your bets.
Exactly.
To have like
I mean, Foss always used to say that gold is a CDS on the failure of Bitcoin, right? I mean, if for some reason the Bitcoin network went down, gold would go straight up. And there's one other piece we haven't really talked about, but it's worth mentioning, is that, you know, we're in a monetary crisis. We're in a sovereign debt crisis. We all kind of can see that. And we see that the money is broken. And, you know, guess what? Other people in the world see that too, including, you know, central banks and foreign central banks. And, you know, not everyone's enlightened yet about Bitcoin. And let's just say, maybe there's a time where we need a monetary reset. Well, I think those foreign central banks might think, let's go to gold first. You know, I mean, they're not ready for Bitcoin, and Bitcoin may not be ready for them. So you know.
Well, we've seen now recently the shift. They're buying less and less treasuries and more and more gold.
Exactly. I mean, that's right.
I mean, that seems to be what's driving the gold price. It doesn't seem to be retail buyers. It
correct.
Seems to be,
in fact,
like
it's very interesting. If you look at the charts of U.S. gold-based ETFs, they are shrinking.
Yeah.
And I think, and it's funny, they're almost shrinking in the same way that the Bitcoin ETFs are growing. And I think a lot of people have, you know, and I think Bitcoin has stolen a good piece of gold's thunder, you know, in that respect. Keep in mind, though, that there's still a lot more to go. I mean, the Bitcoin network is worth, what, 1.4 today or 1.3?
Something like that.
Right?
Fraction of gold.
Yeah. Gold's $12 trillion. Now, also keep in mind, excuse me for a second. Also keep in mind that not all of that $12 trillion is really available. That includes every museum in the world, which, you know, we're not going to melt down, you know, famous museum artifacts. That includes all the jewelry that's around women's necks. Now, at a high enough price, a lot of that jewelry will get melted down. That includes all the gold that's held by central banks.
Isn't there a crazy amount, percentage of gold, in India?
Do you know what
the percentage of the...
Yeah, I would guess like 20% or 30% of the world's gold is in India. Yeah, it's crazy because they're so culturally in love with it. And a lot of it's in China, too. And China underreports what they own, but we know... They're underreporting. The reason we know that is most of the gold in the world is refined in Switzerland. It's the biggest refinery. And they do report where they send their gold. And they're sending just gobs and gobs of it to China. So if, you know, if there were a monetary reset and gold were the chosen vehicle, the Indians and Chinese would benefit, you know, disproportionately to the rest of the world, which is why Jason Lowry and his whole thesis, I think, is so important that the U.S. just leapfrog that. And, you know, we go on a Bitcoin standard and just skip the gold step.
Yeah.
But, you know, whether or not we'll be smart enough to do that, who knows? I mean, yeah, right? I mean, think of our government.
Nothing points to that.
Yeah, but they're not the sharpest tools in the drawer, right?
Yeah. So I'm curious as to, you know, you're here in El Salvador.
I love it.
The first country to adopt Bitcoin
as
legal tender and to put it on their balance sheet.
Yep.
Do you think there are other countries out there right now that are secretly doing this?
Yeah, it's funny you should mention that. I do, and I don't think, why would they broadcast it?
Yeah.
I mean, if they're trying to do it and do
it. If you're trying to accumulate, you don't want to push the price
exactly.
up.
Exactly. So, yes, I do. I strongly do. I was at Satoshi's Roundtable, which is a Bitcoin and crypto event in Dubai.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the entire, a big piece of the Dubai, you know, the UAE royal family and their advisors were attending and listening quite carefully. And yes, I think that there are other countries that are accumulating Bitcoin. It wouldn't surprise me if Russia, as an example, were mining and holding Bitcoin. I don't think China is enlightened enough to do it. I could be wrong, but I do think that other countries are going to be doing it. It's, you know, it's game theory and it's kind of an arms race. And, you know, I will say this, another data point I think is relatively important. It was told us, you know, in a small meetup where we were with him before the kind of the government clamped down on him and took away his ability to sell his book. You know, Jason Lowry, the guy who works at the Pentagon, and he said his belief is that, you know, the CIA and the Pentagon get it. I mean, they read his book. They understand that this is going to be the apex predator of the monetary network, and they get it, and they think we should be buying it. The problem is, you know, the Fed, the Treasury, the Congress, the President, you know, everybody else hates it because it threatens their, you know, their money game and the way they can print it will and so on and so forth. So you've got kind of competing factions, but not everybody in the U.S. government's stupid.
Well, and I'm sure even within those organizations, there's some people that
even
really get it, and other people
are like,
that,
we don't believe. Right.
It was interesting after they adopted Bitcoin is legal tender here that the U.S. Embassy here was like freaked out.
They were
completely blindsided. Like they had no.
Well, and what the other thing I thought was interesting is, you know, the IMF response to El Salvador. I mean, they did not like that one bit, right?
Yeah. No, it was amazing. And I think that, you know, people say they you know, rushed the, you know, things here and that it was messy, and that's all true. But I really think that was by design, that Bukele was smart enough to know that if he gave them time, they would back channel and make all
these. They'd figure out some way to mess
him
up.
They would make all these threats that if you do this, we're going to do that. But if he just got the toothpaste out of the tube, it would, you know, even if it made a mess,
it's too late. That's interesting. You see that. Yeah, I could see that.
But they, they sent, it was actually when Peter McCormick was here, the embassy sent like a team of three people down. One was their, like, I think their CIA liaison, and he was the most anti. But you could just tell they were just like, of this group, you could tell one guy in of the three got it.
Oh, really?
One guy was like, "No, this is only money laundering." And the CIA guy, and the other guy was kind of neutral. But they were just like, "What? Explain what happened here?
Yeah, what
happened? How did we miss this? All the spying and everything that they do. They had no idea that it was
like,
coming.
It
was announced in Miami at this conference.
I know. It's like and they weren't paying attention. It was like a wake up call. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I often think that, you know. I mean, there was a time where they probably could have really thrown sand in our face, messed us up, and killed this whole damn thing. Do you know what I mean? If they, you know, put restrictions on it or taxed it. I mean, they're all kind of, but now, I mean, you know, the toothpaste is out of the tube, as you say. I mean, and these three judges in Delaware, I mean, these guys are going to go down as heroes, the ones who approved, you know, who saw it the way that, you know, in favor of grayscale.
Yeah.
Because that's what pushed Gensler to do the ETF. And the ETF is just an enormously important thing, as Saylor says. He's right. I mean, I totally agree.
So you agree, you're on that side. See, I still have.
I know it's not self custody, but go ahead. What don't you like about it?
My concern is this is going to be the government's like
I know
sanctioned way for you to
totally
have
totally
Bitcoin.
Agree. And I talked about that yesterday. Totally agree.
And they're going to push more and more.
Totally.
And they're just going to. They're not going to say it's illegal to self custody, but they're just going to make it more and more challenging.
Absolutely.
That people just, it's not worth it to them.
There's a strong possibility that they looked at it and said, okay, this is going to happen either way. Let's at least have it in our system rather than out of our system so that if we decide in the future that we want to shut it down, we can make six phone calls to Fidelity, BlackRock, you know, all the, and say, give everybody back their cash and send the Bitcoin to us, you know, 6102. I mean, it's very possible. So, and also they know they're going to get the tax income on it, right? I mean, one of the things they hate about it now is, you know, you buy it cheap, you sell it, you don't report it. You know, I mean, it's pretty easy to be, you know, to avoid the tax. And so this way they do get the tax. So I hear you on that, and I agree with that. And I think that's a risk down the road. But having said that, I think the counterweight to that, and why I think they're in general net good, is that they just bring more people into the understanding of what it is, and they will push the price up, and the price being higher will pay for the development of Lightning and all the other things that'll help with the adoption that we so badly need. If we intend to make sats legal tender and denominate most things in sats, you know, we got to have a lot more users.
Yeah.
You know? And they help, and this helps, right?
No, and that's where we'll see it play out over history. Does that bring people in? My fear is that keeps people from actually spending Bitcoin, using it, having circular economies like we see here.
Yeah, and look, I think the circular economy thing is great. I think spending Bitcoin is great, but I'm with Saylor. This is digital property, and let's win on the digital property argument first. Let's get that one right, and because, you know, and stop the monetary debasement and protect people from being stolen from the government every year. If we get that piece right to start with, you know, we can take our time. I mean, I wish we wouldn't. I wish it would go faster to have the payments and the Lightning and all the other stuff around it that you and I both know we need to really make it spendable money and everyday money. You know, but right now, it really is a good version of digital gold. Is the best way I see it. I mean, to me, gold is analog sound money, and Bitcoin is digital sound money. And so, you know, and let's let it win on that basis. I mean, it'll pass gold here sometime in the next few years, pretty easily, in my view. And you know, and the other things, those apps will come. You know, the Fediments will launch, and we'll have, you know, more and more Lightning transactions. I mean, I was stunned. I arrive in El Salvador. You know, I come through customs. I show my passport. I have to pay my entry fee, which is very modest, like $12 or something. Mm-hmm. And I ask, what do you take? And I, you know, Bitcoin, MasterCard, or cash. And I thought, this is great. You know, and so. You know, it's a real advancement.
It's amazing the number of Bitcoiners who I've seen make their first Lightning transaction in El Salvador. I'm like, I know there's Lightning, but I've never actually used it. I'm like,
right.
Oh, come on, you've got to
get going.
Yeah. Even I think Peter McCormick it was his first time he used Lightning. He was here early. He was one of the first to come, and he bought pupusas with Lightning. And
nice.
Then, Ray Youssef from Paxful, he now no one's, I think it is, that he was here, so, and he's like, I've never used Lightning before.
So you live in El Zante. I mean, when you go out to dinner or you go to a store, or you do things in El Zante, what percentage of the time can you use Lightning to transact?
Oh, 100%.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, but part of that's just because I don't go to the
places that don't
places
have
that
it.
Don't.
I get
and
it.
It's,
but there are enough places that have. So you've got a grocery store, you've got a gas station, you've got a...
Everything. The gas station was the hardest one for some reason.
Okay.
And it was, and that was partially a problem with Chivo because these people said they took Bitcoin, but it only worked if you had a Chivo wallet.
Oh,
so it's not really Bitcoin. But now there is a gas station on board. But yeah, the main supermarket in the country takes Bitcoin. Their version of Costco, which is PriceSmart, takes Bitcoin.
Nice.
We've bought a couple brand new trucks for the project.
My goodness,
we
seriously?
Paid in Bitcoin.
From an auto dealer?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, wow.
So, there's tons of people are buying properties in Bitcoin.
You can go out for a restaurant, my meal, no problem.
Yeah. I mean, if you get outside of El Zante, then
it falls off quickly.
Yeah. There's going to be, if you want to only spend Bitcoin, you can definitely outside of El Zante live on Bitcoin only, but you're going to be, you know, you're going to have.
It's spottier. I get it.
But in El Zante,
So you've got a real circular economy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
It's still in process. Still a lot of those, you know, a lot of the businesses are like keeping their Bitcoin and started paying their employees, like, so, you know, at least a portion in Bitcoin. You know, a lot of them are converting to dollars. But now, you know, that as we get into a bull market, they're oh, man, I should have and so I think. That's always helpful to get them, you know, to see that over time. And, you know, then they hear from us, hey, dollar's just going to keep going down. Yeah. And so there's one hotel owner in particular, Palo Verde, which is a beautiful hotel.
That's a nice hotel, right?
Yeah. And he came on early, and
nice.
it's a family business. He's, you know, I think the son that, you know, but it's, you know, some of his parents' money. And he's like, hey, we're going to do this. We're going to go all in Bitcoin, and we're going to keep it. And he said it was very hard during the bear market because everybody's like, dude, you're an idiot. But he's like, now I look like a genius.
Yeah,
and everybody's like, okay, that was like
yeah,
the obvious decision.
When you take it to 70, it goes to 15. It's a little hard. Yeah.
So now you see, you know, but now they was taking it when it was at 15 and now
right,
it's at
and
70,
now it's at 70,
so,
yeah.
So they're sitting very, very good with it. And so it's funny too that the thing, it freaks me out sometimes because I'll go to these little stores and they like, I go to pay and they, I see their balance when they, you know, because it's on their phone and I'm like, yeah.
Is it pretty good?
You should not have that on your phone.
That's too much to have.
We need
yeah.
to upgrade you to a hardware wallet.
Yeah, I need to show you what cold card is.
But
or
when it,
right?
But when it was at, you know, at 15,000, it was a different thing. Now that it's 70,000, that, you know, because
right.
they're just accumulating.
Right.
And, you know,
right.
spending when they need to. The nice thing, too, for them is there's a lot of services that they can pay. They don't have bank accounts, but they can pay their electric bill with Bitcoin. They
really?
Can pay, yeah.
Wow.
So some of them through like third-party services, like
oh,
the electric bill is something you do through Bitrefill. But you,
I see. There's
but
a the company helps you do
it's
it.
It's
yeah.
a direct. I mean, it's very simple and it
what,
saves.
And does, like
yeah.
Bitrefill, they take like a small slice of that.
Yeah,
so.
I think they get a slice from the you know the electric company because
oh.
it saves them.
Right.
Otherwise, they have to take all these payments in person, so they have a
right.
cost of doing
right,
that, and
right.
so. But it just makes it so much easier because you used to have to go down in person and wait in line.
Well, that's another question I was going to ask. I mean, what percentage of the people, you know, are banked in El Zante? I mean, was it a high percentage, low percentage?
It's probably about 30% in
wow.
El Zante. I think nationwide it's about 40%, but that would, you know, obviously the people living in the capital city would
yeah,
have a higher
sure.
propensity.
Yeah.
Part of it is the banks are horrible in El Salvador.
Are
I mean,
they?
It absolutely...
They rip you off at every table.
Well, and they just make it so painful to do anything. You wait in line for an hour,
oh,
and
God.
Then
yeah.
I finally got a bank account here, and we signed. I mean, the stack of paper like this. They wanted
oh, my
tax returns from the U.S. It was, and then they come back out and they're like, "Your signature's wrong. You need to redo it." I'm like, "What do you mean my
How
signature's
can that be?
Wrong?" They're like, "Well, it doesn't match
your
Salvadoran ID card, which is one of those electronic things
oh,
that don't work
yeah,
half
yeah,
the time."
Yeah, right. Of course it doesn't.
So they made me like sit. They I mean, I kid you not. A stack of papers like this.
You had to like trace it.
They had me trace it on like the 20 places
oh,
I was supposed to sign. So they're just so. Bad
yeah.
and they're so afraid of the U.S. They're so afraid of getting kicked off the SWIFT system.
Interesting.
Even one of the banks that's a national bank has been kicked off the SWIFT system. So there's this like threat overhang from the U.S. government. So they don't want. There's no banks in El Salvador that will let you send a direct transaction from any Bitcoin exchange.
Huh.
So they're just so fearful.
How do
so,
you what's the principle like if so you're in El Zante and you're working and I assume you're probably I mean the kind of the currency used here is the dollar right
yeah.
you're getting paid in dollars and you but not in sats because your employer's not enlightened you then want to convert those dollars into sats. Can you go to a store and do that? Are there ATMs where you can do that? Is there a broker here that'll help you do that? I mean, how do you
yeah,
how
there's
do you
kind
do
of all
that?
The above. That has been one of the good things about Chivo. They have the Chivo ATMs, and there's
okay.
really no commission or fees, or
it's
a very,
low,
very
low.
Slight.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
like,
nice. Okay.
Like
so there's a way
a quarter of a
so,
percent
so
or
there's
something.
An on-ramp is
yeah,
what you're saying.
Yeah.
That's great.
And then there's also a local ATM company that's developed these cool Lightning ATMs that you can buy a nickel worth of Bitcoin.
Oh my goodness.
Like it's,
yeah.
it's a coin operated.
Is there one Lightning wallet that kind of works best in El Zante? Because one of the things I've seen with Lightning is some wallets work some places, some don't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Is there one down there that everybody uses? Or?
So the main one that people use is Blink, which was the
Blink.
Bitcoin
okay.
Beach wallet
okay.
Originally. We separated the names just because one's a non, you know, like
yeah.
grassroots. And the others is a for-profit, and
Got
we
it.
Don't really have anything to officially do with it, even
yeah.
though they're great. Galloway's yeah. a great company, and they have a great product. And so, so theirs works. The biggest problem is some Lightning wallets will work with the like the QR codes
yes.
where it has a zero, like you put in the amount. There's
yeah.
other wallets that only will work if you actually create a QR code and put
I
the
see.
Amount in.
Yeah.
And so. Yeah, but it seems to be getting better and better. Initially, that was a huge problem.
Right.
But it seems to be now
yeah,
most of the wallets
that's my experience in the States,
work,
too.
Yeah.
I mean, most of my Lightning transactions are at Bitcoin things, right? Because that's where
yeah.
obviously people
yeah.
are prepared to take sats, you know.
Are you leaving directly from here? Or are you going to make – okay.
Yeah.
So you're not going to go
yeah,
to El Zante at all?
I'd love to, but I got to – sadly, my wife needs to be back in the States tomorrow.
Yeah.
And so
okay.
I got to get out of here tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
So I can't – I don't have time. But I'd
well,
love
you'll
to
have
come
to
down.
Come back and spend some time in El Zante.
I will.
And
yeah,
just
no,
see
I,
how
– I want to do it.
Seamlessly
yeah.
it's
– Yeah. I mean, this is kind of my introduction. But yeah. I will be back because I'm very impressed by it. It's a great country.
It's funny because once you get used to it, it's actually way easier. You don't never have to bring any cash with you.
No credit cards, no nothing. Yeah,
my kids will be like, they'll text me like, "Dad, I need Bitcoin for the pizza." And it's like, and there's no Venmo or anything like that that works here. So if that didn't exist, you'd
sometimes get
in a situation where you couldn't get them funds. And it's funny just how easy it works. And that's what I think draws a lot of people in. And I think El Salvador's adoption of Bitcoin has actually supercharged the development of Lightning applications. And it's shown like, hey, there's a real need for these to be user-friendly. So it's so I'm curious as to what your theory is as to like why there's people like in the gold space that get Bitcoin, and then there's people like Peter Schiff that like are going to go to their grave.
They're going down with the ship. I don't know on that one. But as a general rule, I would divide it into a couple of buckets. I think the biggest thing that a lot of people had, gold people have trouble getting comfortable with Bitcoin on is they're bounded in a history of gold or of money having to have a physical property and being a commodity of some sort. You can touch it and feel it. And there were commodity cycles, and there've been a lot of forms of commodity money. Of course, gold emerged as the superior one, and they can't get a, you know, they have a hard time getting away from the fact that you can't touch it and see it and feel it, and so they can't make the jump from a physical ledger, you know, a physical piece of a ledger to a paper ledger. But yet, what's so funny to them when I push them on this is they've done it in every other part of their life. I mean, if you look at their bank balance, it's not like the bank has the money sitting in a vault. It's just a bunch of zeros and ones on a screen.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? And I also try and use the analogy where I say, look, you know, before mankind even found gold and mined gold and determined that gold was the best form of money, we know we have historical records of people sitting in caves and putting markings on the wall, tally sticks, and keeping track of shit. And so money is a social obligation. If I have money, I can pay you to give me food or gasoline or whatever I want. And in turn, you know, if I do labor for you, you pay me money for doing the labor. And so it's just an obligation between people. And it's really, money at its base is really just a ledger. It's just keeping score of who owes who what. So why does a ledger need to have a physical property? And so I kind of...
And you think gold people would get that.
You do. You do. And also, gold people are generally Austrian economists. And Karl Menger, the founder of the Austrian school, said money is just the most liquid good by definition. And so, you know, it's what has the superior properties that lead it to be a liquid good. And, you know, Bitcoin has superior properties and we're all adopting it. Now, if we weren't all adopting Bitcoin, I mean, money is a shared illusion.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone agrees that a dollar is money because everyone knows you can go into a store and pay for shit with it. And the government prints it fine. Everyone agrees that gold is money. It's been around 5,000 years. It's hard to get it out of the ground. They know what it is. It's shiny. You can see it, et cetera. You know, and what's happening is everybody's going to one day agree that Bitcoin is money. And, you know, I mean, a lot of us already know that, but some people don't. Some people don't believe that it's money, but the number of those people are shrinking and the number of people who believe are growing. As long as that trend continues, Bitcoin's going to be money. And, I mean, it already is, but it's going to be, you know, and if you look at its properties, if you look at its characteristics, I mean, that's what led Saylor to go, this is a better weapon. I mean, it's or safe to say, you know, we just invented gunpowder and you know, gold guys have got spears and you know, and axes. I mean, and, you know, I mean, fuck, gunpowder's going to win.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I think, but a lot of people are hung up in the physicality. Then I think the other thing to defend my gold friends a little bit, you know, as you watch the whole crypto thing unfold from back to present, there was a lot of fucking bullshit and fraud. I mean, a lot, right? I mean, you had Novogratz, there were a ton of grifters, there were a ton of
crypto space.
There still are, right. But my point is, I mean, at least, you know, the biggest one is now headed to jail, you know, but I mean, there was so much criminality around all these tokens and, you know, pre-mining and, you know, even Ethereum, which, you know, monetary policy's changed six times. I mean, there's so much criminality around all these that, you know, and people, you know, we all live and operate with mental heuristics, right? You just kind of, you know, we don't have time to figure out everything to the nth degree. You just kind of, you look at it, you see a pattern, you go, okay, I know what that means. I'm not, you know, based on that pattern, this is how I'm going to behave, right? I'm not going to go dig deep and figure out that Bitcoin's a totally different animal and it's not crypto. They don't have time for that. Yeah. They just look at it and go, hey, they're a bunch of fucking grifters, you know, pounding the table here. I know those are bad people. I don't want, it can't be anything good in that space. And you know, I get that. I mean, I understand that. And so what I
well, especially when the media lumps Bitcoin and
well,
everything.
That's right.
All the, like you have Ben McKenzie, the guy from the OC that's written the book recently. He showed up here in El Salvador for the conference. He wanted to do some type of hit thing, I'm sure. And we're like, hey, we agree with 90% of what you're saying. You just are confused. You think Bitcoin and crypto are the same thing.
That's exactly
right. They're like really on opposite ends of the spectrum.
That's exactly right. And so, and those people have done us a lot of harm.
Yeah.
I mean, in my opinion, I mean, they've really slowed down. They threw sand in the eyes of a lot of people who, you know, might have understood this more easily and better if there hadn't been all that fraud going on.
Well, that's why I'm so thankful to Max and Stacy, because they have come down and just brought the hammer down.
There are a ton of people.
Every
Max
scammer.
And Stacy,
yeah.
I mean, Corey Klipstein. I mean, you know, there are a lot of people who've been out there just pounding the table and calling out these frauds. I mean, hell, there were a lot of us. I mean, I recall being with a bunch of Bitcoiners in Madeira, the first Madeira conference a bunch of years ago, and we were talking about how, we knew Sam Bankman-Fried was a fraud.
Yeah.
I mean, Caitlin knew Sam Bankman-Fried was a fraud. She was telling the SEC. I mean, this was not hard to figure out. You know, I mean, go look at his box video where he talks about creating money in a box. I mean, it's very obvious he was a scamster, and yet people didn't see it for a while, and it took time to unfold. But I understand. I mean, when I talk to friends who are normies who have zero knowledge of the space, they immediately say, "Oh, really? You know, that's that thing that Bankman-Fried went to. You know, is going. You know, they jumped to that,
yeah.
Right?" And I say, "You're right. That was really, really, really bad. And there's a lot of that out there." But what you're missing is the signal of this digital innovation, this unique digital innovation, and it's so important technologically what they figured out, the Satoshis, you know, figured out. It really is important.
So do you think that story will just become clearer over time?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I think, you know, I've seen in my gold friend, you know, cohort, I've seen more and more of them slowly but surely coming over. You know, maybe you're right. I mean, I've seen my investors say, maybe you're right. You know, I mean, I've seen how do I buy this thing again? You know, what's this cold storage thing? I mean, it's, you know, as recently as a couple of years ago, I gave a speech at a gold conference. It's funny, I'm not getting invited to gold conferences to give speeches as much anymore because, you know, they kind of think I've joined the enemy camp,
yeah.
I guess. I mean, and by the way, I don't see them as two enemy camps.
No,
I see them
synergistically.
They're, and we'll get into that in a minute, but I asked the question at this conference, I said, how many of you guys, and this is old, generally speaking, gold conferences are older people. You don't find 25-year-olds at old conferences, you know, 30-year-olds, 50, 60, 70-year-old people. And I said, how many of you own Bitcoin? Half the hands went up. So, I mean, they're getting there. You know, they're definitely getting there. I mean, that's why, and the other thing I would say to Bitcoiners, too, and I say to gold guys, you know, one, don't attack Bitcoiners. They're on the same team as you. But I also say to Bitcoiners, and when Saylor originally came out and was kind of like, gold's the enemy, we got to crush gold, I didn't find that constructive. And the reason I didn't was your gold guy is actually one of your easiest converts.
100%.
Because they totally understand the problem. I mean, they get it. They believe in monetary debasement. They know the government's a mess. They know what's coming. What they don't understand is that there's an alternative solution that's superior. And so, you know, with kindness, we need to educate them as to why, you know, okay, I'm not saying sell all your ounces. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just suggesting that having zero Bitcoin, you know, in 10, 15 years, I bet you're going to regret that. So you should definitely start to put your toe in the water and get some Bitcoin. And of course, once you, you know, as we all know, once you put your toe in the water, it's a slippery slope. And pretty soon you become a complete raving orange pill nut, you know, like you or me.
Right? Yeah, you rarely see somebody start with a 2% allocation and then decide they want to drop to a 1% allocation.
It's just not the way
it goes.
It's
always the other direction.
It's just not the way it goes. Yeah, I mean, so you know, when they say you get Bitcoin at the price you deserve. And so my view is, you know, buy now, avoid the rush, because it's gonna cost more. And I mean, you know, I think it's hard for people to understand this, but everybody thinks they paid too much for their Bitcoin, you know. But when it's $1 million a coin and being a whole coiner is a big deal, you know, you won't regret that you paid 70 versus 68 or 75 versus whatever. I mean, you know, obviously, I mean, the buy of the century, really, and I was buying, but not, you know, I was pretty fully allocated, so I really didn't have any money to buy. But I know some guys who kind of got it late. And then they, after the FTX, and they bought in heavy
that,
at 15.
That was the risk reward adjusted.
What a fucking trade. I mean, I was paying 17 in 2017.
Yeah.
Okay. So here you
are. When there was still a lot more risk.
Oh,
that it
I mean,
was gonna,
enormously more risk, right? Here you are 7 years later, and you got, or no, it was probably 6 years later, because 15 was a year ago. No, I think at least, but you know, and you got an opportunity to buy it for 15.
Yeah. Well, I'm like you. I bought a little at that time, but I was already all in.
I was selling what I could of other stuff, but I was already all in.
But I was like, you got to be kidding me. Like,
yeah, it was really quite a bargain, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That I remember talking to my wife because, you know, she gets a little nervous. She's,
all
in Bitcoin, and she's like, I'm like, we need to buy more. She's like, but it's going down. I'm like, no, trust me, this is the time.
Yeah, so. Exactly. I mean, it's, yeah, when it went to 15, I recall my wife thinking, you know, are you sure about this shit? You know? And I was like, yep, I am. Just relax. We'll be fine.
The worst for me is because the first entry point early on, it was hard to buy it in your IRA unless you did the whole self-directed thing, which was a pain in the butt, really.
It really is, yeah.
And so my wife was in, you know, hers was all allocated to GBTC. So not only was it going down with Bitcoin, but then it was trading at like 50% of the value. She's like,
what the hell? Yeah, it's not even equal to the low Bitcoin price. Yeah, I know.
And then at that time, you're like, well, does somebody know something I don't know? And this Bitcoin doesn't really exist. And then I'm trying to like tell her, no, it's going to be okay. But in my mind, I'm going, hope this isn't some giant rug pull.
No, I agree with you. There was a time when that discount was pretty large, and
it kind of to like 50%.
I know it did,
and it was
I know it did, and it was. Yeah, and you're thinking, boy, they better have those fucking coins.
Yeah,
you know, right?
Yeah, no. Yeah. So I was relieved when that whole thing played out, and it was a lesson learned to not do what's easy. You gotta control access.
I mean, having the keys to your coins is critical. It's absolutely critical. And that's, you know, by the way, as we talk people into buying the ETF to get them started, you know, the next talk is a self-custody talk.
Yeah.
Because the ETF doesn't solve that.
No, it doesn't. But like you said, it can pique people's interest and get them going down the rabbit hole.
Well, and there are certain pools of capital. As you say, starting a self-directed IRA is hard.
Yeah.
There's certain, you know, I mean, I even have some legacy IRA 401k stuff, and, you know, hey, okay, fine. It would be hard for me to get that to where I want it to be to buy the. I've got a lot of, you know, coins I have the keys to, so I just said, fine, I'm going to buy the ETF. You know, it's like,
yeah,
I got exposure to the price there. It's a small percentage of my holdings, but it's, you know, it's there.
Yeah, no, sometimes you got to do what makes sense.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's, you only have so much time in the day. Yeah.
So, well, I'd like to get a prediction from you. Will we see a country go back on the gold standard or on the Bitcoin standard first?
Ooh, that's a really tough call. I don't know the answer to that. That's a really tough call. I probably think the Bitcoin standard first. I think that you know, we're talking about two different sets of countries, right? The bigger, more powerful countries aren't ready and aren't going to go to the Bitcoin standard. You know, if they try to reset, if China or something try to reset, you know, Russia maybe, they would be more inclined to go to gold because they hold a lot of it, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, the way the game theory is set up, I mean, the smaller countries have everything to gain and nothing to lose. Yeah. I mean, it's not a surprise that a very small third world country was the first adopter. You know, there was nothing but upside here.
Well, especially because they had already given up their own currency. They had the dollar, so it wasn't even competing with their own currency.
Exactly. And so I think we will see some more small countries make this flip. I mean, I was disappointed recently to see Malaya in Argentina doesn't fully understand the difference between crypto and Bitcoin. I mean, but I mean, there's a candidate for maybe eventually flipping in our favor, or, you know, I mean, in Ecuador or Colombia, or, you know, I mean, it's, I think we will see other countries adopting it. You know, perhaps some of the countries over in Eastern Europe. You know, I think a couple of those kind of get it. You know, we'll have to see. But even if no other country adopts it, I think the more important thing just is as number go up and as it becomes more and more of a stable reserve asset and as volatility goes down, and the volatility is going down. You know, it's just, I mean, it's going to be just more and more common to own this stuff. And the other thing that I would point out that I just think is really important for everybody to focus on is just the macro picture of how early we are and how big this could be and where it could go and why.
Well, it's crazy how it lines up, too, with the decisions the U.S. government's making and how they are just – it seemed like before they could maybe always pull back. Now it's like – I don't see any
We have totally crossed the event horizon of sound money. I mean, the only chance they would ever have of getting us back on the right path would be to try and do what Paul Volcker did, which is really increase interest rates, really cut spending, balance the budget.
But even with the government debt level that
well,
is,
that's my
I
point.
Don't, I don't,
that's my
it's
point.
Impossible.
If they do that, then the interest costs balloon, and then we have an enormous recession. And I think you're right. I think we have crossed the Rubicon where there is no going back. And so now the only thing that's uncertain to all of us is, you know, at what rate and in what bumpy fashion do we go forward with more monetary debasement? I mean, you know, you can. I love looking at the Fed balance sheet. It was $800 billion, you know, before 2008. You know, and it bumped up on that to, you know, 3.7 at the high, came back in a bit, and then it bumped up to 9. It's coming back in again. I mean, I think the next bump takes us to 20, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's kind of logical. I mean, Lynn Alden has a great chart in her book that shows that how that. You know, the base money supply has to be available to support the debt. Without growing the money supply, you know, the debt starts to default, which, you know, you could have that. That's the 1930s.
Yeah.
That's a deflation. That's a depression. And that's always a possible outcome. I mean, I never...
But I just don't think they have the stomach for that.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's always a possible outcome, except that consider we're dealing with politicians whose job is to keep kicking the can, if they can. And the easy.
I think they were successful in COVID. I think.
Oh, absolutely.
They took the exact opposite lesson from it.
Absolutely,
it worked. They're thinking MMT works.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's absolutely right. But remember, they do react to the body politic and what the body politic is saying, and the body politic is pretty friggin' pissed off about inflation.
Yeah.
Pretty friggin' pissed off. I mean, everybody. There isn't a person to a person in this country. I mean, pre this whole event, there was. I mean, you said inflation. Everyone's like, whatever. Yeah. You know, it was a little bit. I mean, it was no big. I mean, I think you talk around. You look around. You know, tables of families throughout this country. I can't imagine there's a family that's not talking about inflation and what a problem it is. You know what I mean? And so that's a big deal. I mean, the politicians are going to have to deal with that. I mean, they're going to. You know, they're going to. And they're trying to deal with it. You know, they're trying to pretend like they're dealing with it. But
I think before they were impacted by it, and they knew they were because of the housing market and everything, that they felt like I'm falling behind where my parents were at this time.
Right.
But they didn't see it at the grocery store.
Right.
Now they've got both at the same time. They still can't afford to buy a house or live in anything decent.
Oh,
and now they can't afford groceries.
I've got three kids in their 20s. And, I mean, they're just looking at me like, Dad, we're screwed. I mean, you know, they're all doing fine.
Yeah,
they're all finally paid. Not excessively, but they're fine. But, you know, the notion
like
of
like in the previous generation, they would have been definitely go buy a, the,
buy
you
a
know,
house.
Middle class
buy,
house.
Yeah,
and,
even
yeah.
buy a car. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like, no. You know, I mean, they're really pinched. They're really, really pinched, and that's playing itself out all throughout the country. I mean, everybody's feeling the same level of pain, and
unless you're on a Bitcoin standard.
Well, that's right. Unless you're on a Bitcoin standard, in which case everything's getting cheaper. I love that meme that somebody put up on the web where it showed, or on Twitter where it showed the cost of a house in Bitcoin, right?
And Press like, and I were talking about that yesterday.
Were you? It's like.
Housing prices are crashing.
Yeah, you know, the fiat price of the houses have gone up, but the Bitcoin price of the house have gone down substantially. I mean, it was like, you know, 30 Bitcoin to 15 Bitcoin to like 4 Bitcoin to buy the average house or whatever. I mean, it's really quite amazing. So it's definitely a better savings technology.
And I love that meme too, because I think that's something that people that. They don't care about finances. They don't care, you know, talking about Bitcoin. They're like, but you show them that, they're like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
This is why I can't afford a house. But these people can.
It's a big difference. And as I say, more and more people are going to wake up to it. And they are waking up to it. I mean, we see that every day. So, to me, it's an exciting time because I think we're kind of, Preston and I were speaking about this on yesterday, I think we're kind of at the elbow of that curve where this is really about to go bigger mainstream. You know, we were pretty fringe, you know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, even a few years ago. But now, you know, this is, I mean, the ETF, you know, the terrible channel CNBC, but, you know, they're talking about Bitcoin every day. They're putting the price up there. I mean, it's. You know, it's going bigger stream. You know what I mean? And so, you know, if you look at, you know, the adoption of cell phones or the adoption of any new technology, any new innovation, you reach a point in the S curve where the adoption really starts to grow rapidly.
Yeah.
I feel like we're at that point.
I'm waiting for somebody to come out with the inverse Cramer Bitcoin prediction fund. I know there was an inverse Cramer fund, but his Bitcoin calls are always anytime he says, "Okay, Bitcoin's
so
a buy," I'm
them,
like, "Oh,
so
we're
many,
in for it." Yeah,
Peter Zeehan. They're all these they're all these terrible people who are just, you know. I'm like, fine, short it, you know. Please, short it.
Yeah.
Yeah, good luck.
Just getting destroyed.
Yeah.
Well, any other observations you have for
Salvador? No, I really appreciate being on your show. I love El Salvador. I met nothing but nice people here. And
well, you got to come back with your wife.
Yeah, I'll bring my wife back.
Beautiful hotels in El Zante.
I know that, yeah.
And,
I think we're coming back and going to El Zante. I think that's I think that's the plan to, you know, get to know it better. You know, I mean, it's a very nice place, and
short flight from Florida.
Yeah, so it really is. It's
2 or 3 hours.
Yeah, it's 2.5 hours less. Yeah, from Miami. So it was quite easy to get here. No problem there. So, I commend Max and Stacy. I commend you. I commend the people up in Berlin. I mean, you know, it's making a difference, right? And I think that. Historically in the United States, a lot of people who were looking to come down to, you know, kind of Latin America to retire, the Costa Rica was kind of the go-to place, right? I have a lot of friends who have taken, and, you know, I haven't been to Costa Rica, but, because this is Bitcoin and that's not, and they're similar, I think I'd come here first.
Well, and the difference we're seeing here, too, is people are coming to build here. I think they come there because, you know, it's cheaper and it's paradise, but people see opportunity here, and so they're... That's the difference we're seeing.
There's a circular economy. Yeah. There's businesses. There's stuff happening.
They're like, this is the new frontier.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what's fun to be around those type of people.
Because they're positive. And, I mean, that is the great thing about Bitcoiners. I mean, we have hope. We know that this is going to make the world a better place. And there is upside in being in this group. It's not just about number go up. It's about, you know, society get better.
And that's wanting the finance system to be fair and equitable.
Yeah, exactly. If the finance system is fair, by definition, society will get better. No, I've really enjoyed talking to you and enjoyed being on the show. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Well,
thank you very much.
We'll get you back down here soon.
Yeah, I'll come visit El Zante sometime.
All right.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.